And now we're joined today, all going well, by our guest here on the Over the Fence show on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 and Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato, Dave Klee from Fish and Game. Can you hear me all right, Dave?
Yeah, mate, I can hear you just fine.
Fantastic, all right. Incident free, switch from the phone to on air, that's always good. And how are you today, Dave?
Yeah, mate, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm loving the sunny weather, although I would love a bit of rain and wind as well to recharge some wetlands and make it a bit better for our hunters, but as many rain dances as I've been doing, it doesn't seem to be working, mate, so it is what it is.
You were just saying you're looking at a wetland that's usually a good refuge for ducks and things that dry as a bone.
Dry as a bone, it's got cracks in it. It looks like something out of the Australian outback at the moment, to be fair. So, yeah, I guess, you know, the 3 years of below average rainfall and, you know, two nasty droughts in a row. And, you know, it's had a, you know, it's obviously had a detrimental impact on our rural sector, but also similarly, it's had a detrimental impact on our ducks and our duck population.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I guess, firstly, you were on about this time last year, Dave, but I guess we weren't going to Free FM then, so maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into the fishing game and such things.
Yeah, so I've been here for a little while now, actually 12 years or so, and yes, my background's freshwater ecology. Did my master's on the Rotorua Lakes, looking at sort of food web dynamics within those lake systems down there. And, yeah, spent a bit of time overseas, over in Canada and Alaska and tricking around and did a bit of work down in a fisheries team down in Turangi on the trout down there. And, yeah, settled up here in the end and live out at Waitatuna Valley out towards Raglan there, not too far from your neck of the woods.
Yep.
And, yeah, so passionate about my hunting and my fishing, love doing it recreationally, love doing it for work, and yeah, a big part of my job now, I guess, is doing all the species monitoring at Fish and Game in the Auckland Waikato here, and also doing a lot of restoration activities of lakes, wetlands, etc., amongst other things. Obviously, on opening weekend, we'll be out and about doing a bit of compliance work too, just making sure people are sticking to the rules. So, yeah, if you see us around, hopefully give us a wave rather than any other digits, and yeah, come and have a chat.
Yeah, that's why. Man, is your area Auckland and Waikato? That's massive.
Yeah, mate, our region goes from Warkworth down to National Park.
Far out.
So, yeah, she's a bit of a drive around to get to see it all.
And how many you guys work that area?
Four of us.
Gee whiz.
One of those positions as an RMA position, so not really field based. So yeah, we're a small outfit. I mean, for those who don't know, so Fish and Game is fully licensed, payer funded. So the only way we make money is through selling game bird licenses and fishing licenses. And I do rely heavily on getting external grants from some of our funders to do all the, you know, wetland restoration and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we're not government subsidised, which is a general misconception, is that we somehow, you know, leverage off the taxpayer, but that's not the case at all. It's a purely user-pays system that we operate under.
And how many users would you have in your area, would you guess?
Well, so how many people?
Yeah, how many people would be part of? Well,
in the Auckland Waikato region, it's just four of us staff and our manager and an office person. So,
how many, I don't know, what members or what have you, like by licences?
Oh, right. We've got about 7,000 licence holders in total.
Yeah.
That's just on the game bird side. Fisheries, it's about 2,500, something like that.
All right.
Season. Yeah. So about 10,000 licence holders in our region all up.
Mm.
Obviously, landowners, and this might be quite a good point to make too, landowners on their own private land do not need a licence to hunt game birds. So, yeah, so there's an exemption there. So we don't actually know exactly how many people partake, like on opening weekend, but probably a good couple of thousand of them, I'd imagine, as well, that are hunting basically on landowner privileges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you say fish, is it basically just trout or some other species also?
Yeah, there's a few other species in the mix too, mate. So we've got tench, and the Auckland Waikato rudd are considered a sports fish as well. Obviously, salmon down the South Island, So, but yeah, it's primarily trout is the main one. Perch is another one that is also falls under the sports fish category.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, we're solely game birds and sports, freshwater sports fish. So nothing to do, obviously, with the oceanic species, although salmon do have time in both ocean and freshwater.
Yeah. Have you guys got anything to do with, I guess, trying to knock down the koi carp numbers or anything like that? Or is that kind of out of your kind of thing?
Well, look, they're not a sports fish, but we certainly manage them in our wetlands. So, you know, the wetlands that I've been designing and building and constructing and so on, we tend to use water control and manipulation to manage koi numbers. And we've also put in fish traps and so on to try and, or fish barriers to try and keep them out of wetlands or to catch them. And obviously my colleague, I don't know if you know, Adam Daniel / Carpy.
Carpy, yes. No, he's been on the show a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. So he's obviously, his background is in migratory, monitoring the migration of koi carp in the Waikato River. So although he's now working for us and doing the trout side of it, he's obviously got a lot of knowledge when it comes to carp. So yeah, we'd like to think that we do know a bit about carp and trying to manage them, obviously, and trying to mitigate the impacts, especially in the systems that we control and manage.
Yeah, it's always been frustrating for me because I know there's been a couple of attempts to turn carp into fertiliser, to put them to some good use, but yeah, it just kind of died. I think it was a council thing and it just kind of died off. I think Bruno, one of the locals here, was sort of managing that project and just nothing's happened with it, which is, it just seems such a... Because it's a resource, right? And there's plenty of them, so, and they make good fertiliser, so I just don't know why that's not kind of funded well.
Yeah, look, I mean, that is frustrating. Like, I know Bruno, and he's a passionate man, and he's got some awesome ideas, and why that hasn't been received better funding through council, I don't know either. I mean, essentially, I mean, one of the issues, I guess, with making something like koi carp a resource is that potentially down the track, if you build a whole industry around it, because koi carp are inherently difficult to manage using any traditional means or mechanisms. So really the breakthrough will be if some of the new technologies like gene drive technology, for example, like the Daughterless Carp program or the koi herpes virus, which you're investing in over in Australia, if something like that came through, which would actually help eradicate them entirely, which is obviously the aim. Problem is, mate, if you build a whole industry around it and people start making a whole lot of money off it, then is there going to be still the will to get rid of them, you know?
So yeah, that's true too.
There is that aspect to it, is that you need to make sure that the overriding goal is not management, i.e., you know, when you start making industry, people start talking about wanting to manage it as a resource. To my mind, the overriding goal should be to eradicate. And so as long as that's the push and that's the drive, then we're all for it.
Yeah. And what are these technologies? How do they kind of work, that you're talking about?
So gene drive technology basically means that you can genetically modify organisms that they will only, they either won't be able to reproduce, or let's say the daughterless koi program is that basically you won't be able to create, or you'll be able to genetically modify them so that they'll only produce males.
Right.
So, and obviously females are the ones that lay the eggs, so if you get rid of all the females out of a population, then you'll basically drive that population to extinction.
Right.
There's that, or the koi herpes virus, which is obviously going to be a viral infection that will go through the koi population and we'll be able to knock the numbers back, similar to what the Khaleesi virus, or the idea behind the Khaleesi virus was for rabbits. So something like that, which would actually have a major impact. So to put it in perspective, all the trials that have been done to reduce biomass by either netting or putting traps in and so on really hasn't been effective at either reducing the biomass, but even when the biomass has been reduced, it hasn't actually improved water quality much in those catchments. And look, I mean, again, I think koi carp need to be eradicated. I think that's a really good aim, but we also shouldn't kid ourselves to think that if we got rid of koi carp, we'd magically solve all of our other issues with water quality either. They're definitely detrimental, but there's also plenty of waterways that are highly degraded that don't have any koi in them at all. So I guess we need to be realistic about what outcomes we'll achieve by just getting rid of koi. They're definitely not, it's not a silver bullet solution saying let's get rid of koi and everything will be fine with water quality. That's definitely not the case either.
Yeah, and I guess that's where you spend a lot of your working time, just cruising around looking at wetlands and, evaluating stream quality and such things, Dave?
So look, I'm definitely more focused on the game bird side of it. So yeah, definitely more wetlands and lakes. So there's a, unfortunately with these hot, dry summers, we have some pretty major issues in some of our freshwater ecosystems. Like this summer, obviously some bad botulism outbreaks again, which which were like, there's someone that had the news of it was Lake Naroto, where basically our lakes are so degraded now, they're hyper eutrophic with these massive algal blooms, and then when they become stratified, they basically all the oxygen gets used in them.
Oh,
and
right.
Then when all the oxygen is used, you get these big fish kills, and then following on from the fish kills, you get botulism outbreaks. So it's sort of this vicious cycle that occurs in some of our systems. And yeah, it's not, yeah, so it sounds like a fun job, but when you go spend 3 weeks picking up dead stuff out of lakes, it's got its ups and downs, mate.
It's not
all glamorous.
Nah, no doubt. I mean, you know, with these, you know, temperatures, obviously one factor, I guess, nitrogen, you know, runoff and what have you, would be another one. What other factors are involved in that kind of thing?
Yeah, so like I say, so it's sort of a cascade of events. So with the lakes being hyper eutrophic, they're super saturated with both nitrogen and phosphorus in a lot of instances. That leads to algal growth, and then as that algae, so you get these big cyanobacterial blooms, which in themselves are quite toxic, and so we had massive ones down there, and then that leads to that cascade of effects that I described. So botulism is which is the end result, which kills all the waterfowl. It's a bacteria that lives in right around the region, basically in soils, but it needs the right climatic conditions to become available. And one of those things it needs is a protein substrate. So you think about it, you get a low DO event, so all your fish start dying, and this happens both within lakes, but more commonly in places like wastewater treatment plants, which are sort of your perfect environments for anoxia. Then you have that protein source, and then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, you get the botulism outbreaks, which kills your birds. So it's sort of a vicious cycle that occurs. And yeah, temperature, hot, dry summers, water drawdown is part of that whole cycle. And I guess the thing is, moving forward, unfortunately, it looks like these type of hot, dry summers are going to be a more common and reoccurring theme. So I guess we've got to get our head around that and start looking at ways we can better manage our freshwater ecosystems to try and stop these things from occurring. And if they do occur, I guess have the right processes in place to manage them so that we don't get these massive die-offs.
Yeah. Yeah. And how are the lake levels like? Is Lake Taupo lost a bit of water or a bit lower than usual, or how's that?
Mate, Lake Taupo is outside of our region. I'm not 100% sure. The river's definitely low.
Okay.
If you're going out shooting on the river on opening weekend, just check your areas where you're going, because there's a lot of sandbars and stuff that are just below water level now. I hate for anyone to flip their boat or anything, so just take it easy.
Might be a few high and dry mimos, you reckon, eh?
Oh, mate, there's going to be, like, the swamps almost completely dry in most instances, so there aren't many birds living in them. But some guys will shoot well. The guys that have got good water in their ponds or are shooting on big lakes, we've had a much better breeding season this year than the last two, so there should be a few more birds available.
Oh, that's good.
But I think it'll be really much a case of the haves and the have-nots this year. The guys that are shooting somewhere where the birds are feeding, there's limited food available because all the swamps are dry. There's nowhere really for the birds to feed, so a lot of the birds will just be chasing, you know, recently cut maize, or, you know, farmers that are feeding out maize silage, that kind of stuff. So if you're shooting somewhere where there's a good ready food source nearby and you've got good water in your pond, then you should do fine. But for those poor buggers that have got, you know, a quarter of an inch of water in their pond in a swamp somewhere, it might be a different story. So
it might be well out of luck.
It's and, you know, again, this is sort of the theme at the moment. You know, our big wetlands like Whangamarino or Kapuatai and places like that are just just way below. And even Lake Waikato is, you know, which is one of our biggest lakes, the biggest lake in our region, it's 300 millimetres below its minimum operating level at the moment.
Far out.
Yeah. Everything's way down on where it should be. And as the farmers out there will know, it's sort of a green drought right now, and, you know, there isn't much grass growing either.
That's for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty tough for everyone, including the ducks.
And so the lack of water, that's probably going to have a knock-on effect on the duck population to some level, I guess, isn't it, Dave?
Jordan. Yeah, so we know that, and particularly having a good number of high quality seasonally flooded wetlands during the breeding season is really important for our duck population. So in years when we haven't got any flooding, seasonally flooded wetlands, we just have a really limited amount of breeding areas. And, you know, because most of our larger water bodies, like our large lakes, are so degraded now, they really don't provide an adequate resource anymore for our birds during the breeding season. So, for example, most of them haven't got a very good invertebrate, so it hasn't got the little bugs and stuff in it, which the ducklings need. They need a really high protein diet. So if you don't have that anywhere, then your ducklings aren't going to survive. And so, again, we need rain at the right time of year to create these seasonally flooded wetlands to give our birds a chance to reproduce and survive. And, yeah, so the last 2 years, our population's nosedived and been really poor. So, yep, droughts affect ducks. As you can imagine, waterfowl need water, and if we don't have water, then, it's really hard on them as well.
Gee whiz, it sounds, a few little things cascading all together to, affecting many species. And I guess, what's the catch rate anyway, if you do happen to come across some ducks, Dave?
Right, so the bag limits, you mean, this year?
Yeah, the bag limits, yeah.
Yeah, so eight dabbling ducks per hunter per day.
Yep.
You can shoot another 10 parries on top of your 8 mallard and greys and shoveler. And then obviously you've got separate limits for black swan and so on as well, another 2 of those. Then you got your 3 cock pheasants as well, which you can shoot, 10 pukekos. So, what I encourage people to do, if they're not familiar with the regs, just pick up a reg booklet. They come free with the license, or you can look at it online and check it out. Just make sure you know what you can shoot in the area that you're hunting.
I know Canadian geese are a big problem, especially around out in the coastal kind of areas, you know, in the harbour here and Aotea and places like that. I mean, I guess, how did they come to be, what's their history in New Zealand, I guess? Do you know any of that kind of stuff, Dave?
Yeah, so look, I mean, initially they were released as a game bird. And
that would have been, how long ago?
I don't know, a long time ago, I don't know the exact date.
Like ages ago?
Yeah. And they subsequently did, obviously there's localised populations that subsequently increased. And then I guess in, you know, most recent years, so in the Auckland Waikato, we've been doing trend counts since 1983 on all our, so geese, swan and paradise shelter.
Yeah.
And the numbers sort of increased, but then we had some big culls. I think the last big one was in 2007. It was before my time, it was just before I started.
Yeah.
And we knocked the populations back quite significantly during those two big culls that we had. So that involved a whole lot of hunters out and about, aerial, activities. So we had planes and helicopters and so on up, hazing the birds. So large numbers did get shot. But then there's quite a bit of lobbying. I guess people weren't satisfied with how Fish and Game were managing geese, and in 2011 they were removed as a game bird, and so since then they've been on Schedule 5, which is basically unprotected. So there's no more bag limits, there's no more season length, you can basically shoot them anytime, providing you have landowner permission, obviously, anywhere, by any means. So unfortunately, I don't think it's really worked very well. At the time, I guess it was viewed as a big victory in terms of people being able to manage geese, but I think what's been absent is any real strategy around geese since then.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, the numbers in 2011, we had about, in our annual trend counts, we had about 2,200 geese that we counted. By 2021... we had about close to 10,500.
Gee whiz.
They've gone up exponentially. And it shouldn't be surprising, to be honest. I mean, you take a highly adaptable species. I don't know if you've hunted geese, but they are difficult to hunt. They're pretty smart. They get old. They get wily. And you remove any form of formal management and kind of just leave it up to individuals to, shoot the odd one here and there. I mean, this was the only logical outcome that was ever going to occur, I think.
Right.
You know, it'd be like saying, let's, you know, I mean, just because you make possums a pest, right, if you took all the management away from possums and no one actually coordinating anything, like you removed EPRO and just said, right, everybody manage possums, they're a pest now, go for it. I don't really think you'd get the population under control, you know?
Yeah.
So I just think it was poorly thought through. I mean, you know, at the time, you know, especially Fed Farmers lobbied really hard, and you know, if you look at the PR that was put out at the time, they said that they would be looking to step up and manage geese or coordinate management of geese. That's it. I know, look, there's been local people. I mean, I still try to participate in culls and help out where I can, but we receive zero budget, zero funding now to manage geese. So,
It's interesting. It appears to be like a, you know, no one's kind of doing anything, the regional council, the government level. Like, it's just nothing's kind of happening now, you know?
Look, I mean, hey, look, maybe Fishing Game weren't managing them perfectly. Okay, that's fine. But to just remove all forms of management and not have anyone responsible for them is just crazy.
Yeah, it's unsurprising they're a problem now, yeah.
No, exactly. And now, I mean, now there's talk about people saying, oh, Fishing Game should manage them again. I'm like, well, hang on a minute. The numbers have basically increased, you know, fivefold. If we need to start culling them and so on and doing it properly, I mean, there's ways you can reduce goose populations, but you need to do it properly and coherently. And there's a method, and it doesn't involve, you know, people rolling down the back paddock with a 303 and taking the odd pot shot at them. So again, that would need to, and it would take a bit of money now and finances to actually get the population back to manageable levels, because they have exploded now to the extent they have. So
yeah,
so it's not an easy one, mate, the geese. I agree that in some places, you know, they need to, they probably do need to be reduced in numbers. And I know there are really, you know, goose hunters out there that are still, I mean, they're an awesome bird to hunt when you do it, when you get it all right. There's nothing like having, you know, like just geese just decoying into you, you know, and there are guys out there shooting 200-300 birds a day. The guys around Raglan Harbour, I know that cull they had earlier in the year that was organised, so some landowners got together and finally said, enough, we're going to coordinate this, we're going to, you know, pay for a chopper, we're going to do the stuff and do it properly. And I know they got a good hit on some of the geese, and some of the guys there shot over 200 birds in that,
right,
that cull.
Right.
So look, you can do it. It's just it takes time, effort, and money. Yeah. And so someone's got to put their time, effort, and money into it, you know?
Yeah, kind of simple as that, really, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, that's great. Great to chat, catch up, Dave. I mean, like, you know, what any advice for people who might be going out this weekend, which of course is opening weekend for the ducks? What would you say to potential punters?
Yeah, look, be safe out there. You know, check your water levels if you're taking a boat anywhere. You know, because there will be a few. Few potential, or maybe take it to be a prop with you as well, because there's going to be a few things sticking out of water that normally wouldn't be sticking out of water just because the levels are so low. And you know, if you do bum into us, or like we've got a few honorary rangers that roll around as well, just checking licenses and so on. Hey, we're not there to ruin anyone's day, and the honorary guys are there, they're purely voluntary. So, you know, feel free to give me a bit of flack if you see me, but maybe just, you know, be easy on the honorees. They're just out there because they're passionate guys, and they love the sport, and they just want to make sure everyone's abiding by the rules. Make sure you read your regs beforehand, know what the rules are. If you've got any questions, feel free to give me a call at the office, you know, and I'll run you through it. And have a real good one. Enjoy it. Enjoy your time with friends and family, and hope for some rain later in the season so we can get a bit more water around.
That's the one.
If you know, if there's any landowners out there listening that are keen to maybe do a bit of wetland restoration work, it's a big part of my job is working with keen farmers who want to restore habitat. So again, feel free to give me a shout, and we'll catch up and see what we can do.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Dave. And is it too late to get a license now, or is it easy done straight away online? Or how
online,
does that work?
Mate. Online, yep. Just go for it.
Yep. Like Fishing Game, tap it up.
Yeah. Just jump on there, get yourself a license. Hey, and if you've never been duck shooting before and you want to give it a go for the first time, there is this thing that we've got on called Take a Mate Hunting. So if you're going hunting and you got a mate who's never been out, you just pay the Game Bird Habitat Trust stamp, which is $4 this year, I think, and that will allow you to take someone new out hunting for the first time for only $4.
Cool.
So that's another initiative we've got just for people that maybe want to give it a whirl but aren't quite willing to commit, yeah, the money that costs to buy a full season license, so you can go out on opening weekend and have a go and see if it's for you.
It's a great initiative, yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks very much for coming on the show again, Dave, and yeah, we might see you around maybe even this weekend, possibly.
Yeah, possibly, mate. We'll be kicking around. So, if anyone's, like I say, if anyone's got any questions, they can give me a call, eh? And just give Auckland Waikato Fish and Game a call at the office. I have to speak to Dave. Yeah. And
that's about
try and help them out.
Yeah, about the licenses and wetland restorations. You can do plenty of things through Fish and Game.
No worries.
Hey, thanks again, man. Appreciate it, and take care. We'll see you around.
Okay, mate. Cool.
Cheers.
Cheers for the chat.
Yeah.
See ya.
Thanks, mate. See ya. Dave Clee there from Fish and Game. So, yes, if you are interested in going duck shooting, if you do have any water on your place, which is probably unlikely, get a hold of Fish and Game, get your license, and also if you've got a wetland you want to restore, also get a hold of Dave Clee and the team there at Fish and Game.